When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and our favorite media. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How you doing today, Matt?
I got this tickle in my throat that's constantly threatening to come out in a huge burst of coughing every time I go to speak. So, yeah,
it
not
is
the best.
It is the season for that. It really is. Well, speaking of tickles and throats, we're going to be talking about, it's a weird
nothing
segue.
Nothing to do with anything.
Actually, no, it does. It actually does, because it's part of the story. We're actually going to be talking about the Vow Eternal short story today, and possibly getting to some questions as we have time, depending on. Mostly because this is a 35-page short story written by Christy Golden that actually gives us what Liz has been asking for on our regular podcast show, as well as in our Discord channel and on Twitter, which is getting to see a little bit of the wedding between Lothamar and Tharissa. But before we get into that, I just want to make a little reminder out there that if you have questions, comments, or theme ideas for this podcast or any of our podcasts, be sure to send them into podcast@blizzardwatch.com. You can also send us on Discord. We have a special channel set aside for our Patreon supporters as a way of saying thank you for your continued support, because without you, we truly would not be able to do this or even have the site up and running at all. If you can't support us on Patreon, we do understand that. And you can still support us in other ways, such as making sure you share with your friends, giving out, reviews and letting people know that you enjoy our content. And if you have questions for us and you don't want to send us an email, you can go ahead and send them into our Q and podcast channel questions channel. Words are hard today, folks. I have not had nearly enough caffeine. But let's start by talking about what the Vow Eternal short story actually was. It's a little bit of a segue, right? Like, this is one of those rare instances where usually we would get a pre-expansion novel, or at least that had been the trend in the past. We got one with Battle for Azeroth. We got one before midway through Shadowlands, which unfortunately, wasn't something that led us forward into the next expansion, but gave us more depth of what was happening in the expansion itself. So we got the Vow Eternal, which aims to bridge a little bit of the gap, but not a whole lot. Matt, what did you think of Vow Eternal?
Must be nice having a big magic city. Didn't get burned down by the Horde, so you can go have a big old wedding. Must be nice.
That's it? That's all you're going to give me?
That's all I'm giving you right now. If you want to talk specifics about the book, we can do that. But I mean, I'm sorry. This has been my big problem with WoW for a couple of expansions now, and I want to move on.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that we are moving on. I am glad. I was a bit tantalized by the teaser that the elves are up to something, but we don't know what it is.
I think we have an idea about that, which we'll probably talk about in a little while, because I think we talked about that a little bit after the expansion or after the podcast last week.
Maybe. But regardless, I mean, I liked seeing Rathian get some development. I liked that the story recognized that Rathian did not get to be a whelp. He mm-hmm. just jumped straight into world-saving time with no experience. And yes, dragons have the ancestral memories, but that's almost more of a curse than a blessing for Rathian, as we see. He's got a real problem with what he, quote-unquote, remembers. And this is, I'm going to say up front, he's not, you know, controlled by the old gods. He's not insane or cursed. But, you know, he has the issue of his progenitor, effectively his grandfather or father, depending on how you want to look at it, Deathwing, Neltharion.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what's going on in this expansion is because of stuff Neltharion did in the past, and a lot of Rathian's life has been lived in the shadow of Deathwing. We saw that when in Pandaria, and yeah, it's been a few years now, but he's finally has some time to sit and kind of contemplate his life and what he's going to be. And you get to see a piece of that, and I think that's pretty cool. That's one of the things that stood out to me. Chrissy's always a great writer. That's nothing to do with that. It's just some of the themes are interesting in a way that they have not been in previous. This is the closest view of Rathian as Rathian from Rathian's perspective that we've gotten yet, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that's one of the more interesting points about the short story is that Rathian as a character has, I don't want to say has been very one-dimensional, but has been sort of nonstop go from the time that we, you know, saw him hatch, essentially. And you're right that there's a lot of living in the shadow of his progenitor, and we'll call it that. I think it would be the most neutral way of saying that. But, you know, it's a legacy that is pretty terrible, all things considered. But I think two things are really important about this book or this little short story. One, Chrissy Golden's writing, like you said, is always fantastic, but it's because of her care when she's doing characterization, when she's giving characters depth. And two, that's exactly what this book or this short story, I'm going to keep calling it a book, this novella did. It is giving more characterization to a character that one is pretty beloved by the fan base, I think, at this point. Everybody loves their child in this regard. But it's interesting to finally see him, I don't want to say be human because he's a dragon, but to show like sort of the inner workings, his mentality, and to show a certain vulnerability, because Rathian, like many of the dragons out there, is very much about showing up a front of what they want you to see. In his case, particularly, because he doesn't have a choice because of the legacy of the Black Dragonflight before him, right? He needs to be strong and all these other things, which has led him to make very poor choices and, you know, certain other things, but he doesn't want to show vulnerability around other folks. And it's interesting to see little cracks in the armor, as it were. So it opens up with essentially what is Rathian calling himself the Earth Warder, the aspect of the Black Dragonflight. Now, at first glance, people would start to think that maybe this is some offshoot or an alternate storytelling, but we find out that it is a reoccurring dream. It is something that is hanging over him because it's his legacy, right? It's something that he's talked about in game. It's something that we've seen him hint at in books, where he is looking for a way forward for the Black Dragonflight. And for the longest time, he thought he was all alone until he met Ebonhorn, because all the other black dragons were either completely corrupted or scattered off. I think there's some maybe potentially still an outland. But I thought it was an interesting opening because it showed a deep-seated vulnerability that I don't think we've seen before, but it also shows his hopes and dreams. What did you think about that open?
I mean, it was your standard bad dream to establish, you know, this is what Rathian's problem is. This is what his inner turmoil is. What I liked about it wasn't necessarily, it wasn't doing anything, you know, groundbreaking. I just liked that it basically finally showed you the thing we saw in Pandaria when we did the thing to get the legendary cloak. One of the quests is Rathian facing off against the, I want to say Nizao. And as a result of it, seeing like Deathwing appears to them and is basically the same thing we see here, where he's like, I'm not like you. I'm nothing like you. I liked getting the chance to see, you know, he's really just a kid. He is young.
He's a kid that's been saddled with a lot of responsibility, even inadvertently. Yeah.
And he took a lot of it on himself. And, you know, he talks about his plan to make the Horde and Alliance fight to determine which one was stronger, and how it turns out, well, that doesn't actually a great idea. That it was unity they needed, not conflict. And that almost felt like Blizzard going, oops, yeah, our bad. Battle for Azeroth didn't go the way we hoped. Not sure if that was intentional or just, you know, me reading it that way. But I liked the idea of Rathian realizing, I have not always known the answer. I'm not always right about this. I also liked the fact that it segued into he still lives in Pandaria.
Yeah.
He's still in the same inn that he was in back then. And that's interesting because it implies that he feels alienated enough that he wants to live in a place that no black dragon ever lived before, so he doesn't have to worry about it. Like, they don't have any expectations of him. They don't, Deathwing, Neltharion, all that stuff doesn't mean anything to them.
Yeah, that's really the big thing, right? Because it's the Summer's Rest Inn in Pandaria is where he's been holed up, which is should be familiar to anybody who's spent any time in Pandaria. But that is a really good point. There's no baggage. There's no, we remember Deathwing. We remember what he did to the world. We remember black dragons are bad. There's none of that. And there's no judgment. I believe the Mifan is the proprietor of the inn.
Mm-hmm.
Treats Rathian with just kindness and deference, not in a, you know, he's an imperious tyrant kind of way and I must appease his whims.
General respect for somebody staying at your inn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think there's some play there too with the he's been there for so long at this point because it's been, I mean, what it's been, Pandaria was how long ago technically in game terms at this point?
Add 5 to it. I don't know, man.
So probably close to maybe 8, 9, 10 years, somewhere in that range.
And it's been a while. Yep.
Yeah. So he's been there that entire time. You get to know somebody. You get to understand some of the bits that aren't spoken out loud. Like in this case, he wakes up from the nightmare. He wakes up, struggles and, comes to and realizes where he's at. And then almost immediately, there's a knock at the door, right? There's no shouting. There's no kicking down the door. It's just a gentle knock at the door where Mifan comes in, has breakfast basically ready for him, looks at the room, looks at it laden with just, pure detritus, empty booze bottles, which is another interesting thing. I didn't realize that dragons could get drunk, but apparently that's a thing that can happen.
I mean, it seems like to imply that their visage isn't just a visage.
Yeah.
That they are actually changing physical shape into the thing in question.
And there's some
because he gets drunk off of a glass of Ark wine.
Well, yeah, there's some reinforcement of that later, not just with him, but with others as well, right?
Yeah.
And obviously they must eat, and you would think that a dragon would have to eat a ton, but rice cakes, tea and buns is enough for him to be sated for now. So there is some interesting physiological change that's going on there.
Yeah. But also let's be upfront. He's got a teenager's room.
He does, just with more booze.
Crap tossed everywhere. I mean, I was a teenager. I had booze in my room, but
I said more booze. I didn't say no booze.
But regardless, yeah, there's an interesting aspect to that. I also like that he's generally already, even before he goes to it, he's already like, I don't want to go to this wedding thing. They're all going to be happy. Everyone's going to have found somebody. There's nobody for me. I'm the only black dragon I know, except for like Ebonhorn, and it's not like I'm going to date him. So it was interesting. It was interesting to see, in a way, the fact that it was a relatively melancholy teenage thought made him seem more relatable, because it in a moment where he's not trying to present himself as this fantastic, amazing thing, he sits there and he's like, yeah, this is going to be it. I just get to watch people. I can't even find the Dragon Isles. I've been trying to find them for years and I can't find them. So yeah, that was interesting there.
Yeah. And I think it's also interesting too, because you realize that he has been searching for a while for the Dragon Isles. We knew that as much. We knew as much from what he said in game and what we know from the novels, but we didn't understand why it was so important to him. And we still don't necessarily understand the why of it outside of maybe it is tied into that reoccurring dream or nightmare and that overshadowing legacy that Deathwing has laid upon the Black Dragonflight, which is if I can find this mysterious place, I can find out what happened, why he got corrupted, why he made that deal, or if it was a deal at all, and I can avoid becoming him. Because like a teenager who's been raised in a bad environment, one of the things, and this maybe hit a little too close to home for me and probably some other readers, is, you know, this vow to never become their parent, right? And it's sort of like this ever looming thing, and it's the tug and flow between nurture and nature. But eventually he does relent, and he goes and decides that he is going to actually attend the wedding of the two Horde leaders of Lothermar and Tharissa, which happens to be at the Lunastray estate, where it is actually pretty chock full of both factions, with one noted exception. Would you like to talk about that part of it at all, Matt?
I mean, the Nihils don't show up. They were apparently invited, which is rich. For sure there were blood elves there. And even if there weren't any actual, no, there were blood elves when they went and attacked. Sorry, dude, I'm talking about when they attacked.
Sorry.
When the Darnassus was attacked, there were absolutely blood elves in the army. I didn't see any Nightborn, but there were definitely blood elves there. And then you invite them to your wedding. After how many people did you kill? Wow. And meanwhile, the Night Elves don't come, obviously. You know, the idea that they invited them was astonishing to me. But it's also stated that the tension between the Night Elves and the rest of the Alliance is still there, too. And they're off somewhere doing something. And nobody knows what it is.
Now, we maybe have
We saw at the end of Shadowlands one possible thing they might be doing. So go ahead.
I was going to say, there's a couple things that might be there. The one is, I think, what we got from the... this is a slight spoiler for upcoming stuff inside of the expansion. There was some data mine dialogue that indicates that there might be a way to get Ysera back, but at a particular cost, and that there would be a ritual of some sort involved. And that may be something that they are trying to deal with or do, and that might be the event of which they're talking. Because Ysera is sort of a very important figure for, in particular, the Night Elves, and how close they are with, you know, nature and having all sort of that relationship with the Green Dragonflight, and why Ysera died in the first place is also very important, especially to the elves, because she died so that Malfurion would live, essentially. She essentially traded her life for his. And there's an indication that they might be looking to balance the scales. We don't know too much about it outside of what's been data mined, but it is something that is rather important. Was that what you were referring to, Matt, or was there something else?
No, not even close. I was talking about the deal the Winter Queen gave Tyrande. I'm not sure. I don't remember if it was a seed or not.
It was a new tier of a loon. Yeah.
Yeah. At the end of Shadowlands, the Winter Queen gave Tyrande a new thing saying this can help your people rebuild. So they may have been using that somewhere to rebuild. I don't know if it means that Teldrassil will come back or if it just means that they are going to have someplace else. But based on the way that it seems like Blizzard is going with it, I would not be surprised if Teldrassil came back at this point. Because, like, you know, having the Forsaken retake Lordaeron, although they did that in game, it does feel a little bit like we're trying to kind of pretend that the stuff didn't happen, or maybe not pretend it didn't happen, but show them attempting to rebuild afterwards. So I don't know. But it's been, you know, during the 3-year period after the end of Shadowlands, the Night Elves have been distant. They're still upset with the Alliance for not helping them during Battle for Azeroth. They don't feel like they got fair treatment, and they're even less happy with the Horde, to put it mildly. And I don't blame them. This is the biggest problem I have with the Truce storyline, is eventually something has to be done about that. The instigating incident of everything still needs to be addressed. And it's not like the Horde can just point to Sylvanas and go, she did it, because they, you know, Sylvanas gave the order, but they're the ones who carried it out. And that is something that's going to have to be dealt with. I don't know how it will be dealt with. In fact, I don't think much of it will be dealt with in this new expansion, and I don't expect it to be. But yeah, they're not there. However, Tyrallian and Alaria both go.
Mm-hmm.
Rathian says some things indicating that it looks like Tyrallian and Illyria have kind of resumed the affectionate portion of their relationship, which they've been kind of less than in recent years. They still seem to be by each other, but they don't. There wasn't a lot of, you know, we're a married couple going on.
Well, I mean,
Rathian himself points out, you know, 1,000 years of war, maybe you forget how to do that kind of thing.
Well, not only that, but it's 1,000 years of war, but also everything that happened between the two of them with Tyrallian essentially becoming Lightforged, and, you know, her essentially accepting the Void and founding the Void Elves, for more or less. Like, those two are diametrically opposed. And don't forget, like, the battle, the sort of battle of wills that happened with between Zera and her, essentially, in the... It was the short story, 1,000 Years of War, where, like, there was definitely strain on the relationship as a result of it, because Tyrallian was very much trusting in the direction of the Naru and the Light and was very happy to kind of move forward, and she wasn't. And, you know, at one point she was basically locked in her room under house arrest. That's going to put a strain on any marriage when your husband's basically going, yeah, sure, no, just go ahead and lock my wife up. That's fine. Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. We're good. Like, yeah. So they've been, and that's been a strain on their relationship very clearly. The fact that they've always been by each other's side, like Matt pointed out, because, well, they're all part of the same side, for lack of a better term. They're on the Alliance's side. They're still trying also, to fight for Azeroth.
Yeah, I also want to point out, though, that this is the first time we've seen them and Arator actually together.
Yes.
Not just in some flashback to, like, an evil possible future, you know, that N'Zoth is giving you, but literally Arator is there with them as their, you know, family, as the three of them are a family unit. And that's interesting. It's doubly interesting because they bring Arator to essentially a blood elf nightborn marriage.
Mm-hmm.
This is the most elf he's ever gotten to see. Like, you know, Arator has spent most of his life dealing with, you know, outer space stuff and, you know, war against the Legion. And this was the most elfy elf thing he's ever going to get to see in his life. You know, so that was interesting.
And not only that, it's a rare opportunity for him to get to interact with a lot of people and potentially people in his same age group, which we'll get into in a little bit as well. That
well, I wouldn't say his own age group. I would say, I don't know, peers.
Peers.
But definitely not age group, because the main person Arator gets to hang out with is Dagon Thorason II. And Dagon Thorason II is like 10. You know, so it's not quite his age group, even counting for the fact that Arator is an elf or half elf. He's been around for at least 30 something years, which for half elf, not that big a deal, but it was him being nice to a young kid. It wasn't him hanging out with somebody who will become a lifelong buddy.
But I mean, you never know.
But they might become friends, but I'm just saying that at that moment in time, it was like, wow, this is a neat book. Here, you can look at my knife, which, I mean, you know. What's Arator got to show people besides, you know, I've lived in continuous war against the forces of evil since I was a child. I don't have any pastimes.
And they weren't the only ones that are there. And we can talk about more about them as well. But there was
no, there are a ton. Go ahead. List some of your faves. For me, I'm going to be up front. Bane and Mela.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 100%. But I mean, we got to see actually like Thrall doing family things. Essentially, Thrall brought not only his wife, Agra, he brought his two children, Durok and Rez, which I think that's the first time we've been given their names. I'm questioning this.
Durok, I know we had Durok's name somewhere else in a story or something, but this is the first time we've heard his second child, the daughter's name. So but, that's cool.
But it's nice to see them, you know, out and about and Agra actually to be there, although I would have liked maybe a scene with Agra. That would have been a little bit nice. I always enjoyed her as a character.
I would like to, at some point we get a scene of Agra saying to Thrall, what was that? And he's like, I got kidnapped. I didn't go by myself. I didn't want to go there. You know what I mean? Cause you go missing for a while. Your wife doesn't just be like, oh, where were you?
Yep.
She's like, what did you go on another adventure without me? We talked about this. No, I didn't. I did not go on an adventure. I was kidnapped by an evil banshee.
Drekthar already said he would babysit the kids. We were going to go on an adventure together. It's fine.
And this wasn't on choice. If you could have come through, I totally would have been down for it. It wasn't a boys' trip. I'm not doing that again.
Queen Talanji showing up, obviously, was a good... Yeah, I love that character. The interesting thing was that Zakan was her plus one, which was... mostly just interesting. I don't know if that will mean anything later, but it's a thing that happened. Rokan showed up as well. Like you said, Bane and Mela, which are two of my absolute favorite characters. I love those two and the way they interact with each other. If you haven't done the in-game like pre-expansion stuff yet, you should go ahead and do it, especially the Drakthir starting area, just for, if nothing else, the payoff of Bane coming back and interacting with Mela at the gates of Orgrimmar. It is just a wonderful, the interaction between the two is absolutely wonderful. We get Lillian Voss comes back with Kalia and Derek Proudmoore, who is now Kalia's champion, which is interesting. We knew that he was going to be going with her because he is Forsaken now. But him being chosen as essentially her champion is really, really, it's an interesting development. Also the fact that, why can I not remember her name now? From Kul'Tiras.
Oh, Talia Fordragon.
Talia. There we go. Wow. I just kept wanting to say Thalia over and over and over again. But Talia like openly embraces them essentially upon seeing them. Like there is no animosity immediately between the two of them, which I thought was very, very touching and interesting. Like Derek Proudmoore, who, you know, is essentially a Forsaken now, was warmly greeted by Talia. No hemming, no hawing, nothing like that. We also got to see Matthias Shaw and Flynn Fairwind, which was always an absolutely beloved grouping. And then, of course, Caligos was there. I think I caught everybody.
And then Caligos was there.
I did like
that Caligos was trying to pump Talia for information about Jaina.
Oh, of course.
And Talia's like, nah, she's just busy. I'm, you know, dude, I'm not telling you about your ex.
And yeah. Most surprisingly, and I don't want to gloss this over, even though it was sort of glossed over a little bit in the story, Anduin was there.
Was he?
Yep. Anduin, the King of Stormwind.
He gets mentioned. I don't think at any point he's there.
I'm pretty sure.
I read this just like an hour ago, and I do not remember him actually being there. I remember Raytheon thinking about him and saying that when he comes back, he hopes to, you know, repair their relationship, but I don't think he was there.
The way it was mentioned, maybe I read it wrong, but I thought it made mention that he might have been potentially there, because either way, it's a one-line thing, but I think it's interesting that, you know, I mean, this is something that Anduin would have wanted, right? And that's sort of the thought.
Yeah, that was the narrative in Raytheon's head, is about how, you know, Anduin had long argued that there could be peace between the Alliance and the Horde.
Mm-hmm. But those are all in attendance, and they're sitting down, and they're
obviously, we should point out that Talysra and Lorthamar were also there, as was Haldor and Brightblade, and Ramath. Ramath showed up too.
Which we
and should. Lady Liadrin was officiating. So yes. Yeah, there you go. There's your elf group.
But it's interesting because Raytheon tries to come at the tail end of the ceremony and gets to see them actually exchanging of vows. And of course, as would be expected, Lothamar and Tharissa give their vows in basically prose, right? They're giving them out in poetry, because that is essentially what their relationship sort of blossomed from. I shouldn't say blossomed. The seeds was already there, but sort of like solidified and crystallized and sort of took form was when they were challenging each other to a cultural battle of poetry. And then they realized that now there's something here, but it was nice.
Blossom was fine for that. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should have, we've been using blossom to mean that for literally centuries. I think you were doing okay.
Fair enough. But I think it's interesting.
Trust yourself, Joe.
But I think it's just nice to see two characters actually being able to openly express their feelings with each other, because that's something that doesn't happen a lot in Warcraft, where like characters may be involved with each other, but it's always like furtive glances, or it's complicated, or, you know, maybe it's a trench warfare love thing where we were in battle together. So there you go. But it's nice to just see them genuinely happy and, you know, being there and sort of sharing that love, not only with their closest friends, but with people that would have maybe been considered former allies and possibly now, or, and definitely former enemies. But it was a nice little tiny ceremony. And then, of course, it rolls right into the reception, which is where things get a little more interesting. Now I'm going to stop and I'm going to let Matt talk for a little while.
Marriage. Twuwav. Sorry, I just had to. The reception is actually kind of interesting because, like Joe and I have already kind of talked upon the major things. We forgot the Bronzebeards, who are all there. We did mention that.
Oh, yes. Dagon Corso was there. All three of the Bronzebeard siblings plus Moira. Yeah.
There's Magni, a.k.a. Diamond Head. Then there's his two brothers, whose names I cannot remember at the moment for some reason, even though I've been writing about this game and have written Know Your Lords about every single one of them. Well, then, of course,
one is Bran.
Yeah, Bran.
And Mirrodin.
Yeah, Bran, Mirrodin, and Magni are all there. Magni's still a diamond. Also with them is Moira, and with Moira is her son Dagon. So Rathian doesn't get to meet Dagon, because Dagon is off actually having a competition of, not really a competition, they're just, he's given his book that he's been reading over to Arator. The personification of Dagon Tharason as being a bookworm has continued. The dude likes to read. And Arator is like, well, I don't have a book, but here, you can hold my knife. I've stabbed things with it. And that's, the two of them are like, wow, this is a really cool knife. I could stab things too. I don't just have to read. There's also room for stabbing. And, you know, Arator's like, yeah, that's a nice book. Pretty heavy. I could probably kill someone with this. And we get a brief interchange with Rathian, you know, getting to meet them all and being like, you know, it's good to finally meet you.
And we know that all three have been exploring Northrend, which is interesting. Yes.
And I believe that's going to be the book Exploring Northrend, which is coming out in a couple of months.
Yes.
But also, one of the things I liked about the entire reception is how Rathian is trying really hard to be genial, but he knows, sure, he's respected as having helped save the world from N'Zoth, but people are afraid of him because he is a black dragon. And if you know anything about black dragons, you know that Deathwing was the head of the black dragons, and the black dragons have been basically the bad guys for a long time. And so he's like sitting there, he kind of has that in his head. I think the story sets up through him moving through the various people he talks to. He has a nice exchange with Caligos, which leads into another nice exchange with Caligos later. There's his inner monologue about what he's been doing with his life and how he shouldn't have come there. He should just let his spies watch it. And that moves into a brief discussion with Caligos, because Caligos is one of the people he asked if he knew anything about the Dragon Isles. And Caligos is like, unfortunately, no, we left there before I was even born. I don't know anything about them.
Well, we should probably talk about the Bane and Myla stuff first, like when he is interacting with them.
No, because there's the first Caligos conversation, not the second one. Because remember, he talks to Caligos and then he moves on. And then he has the Bane and Myla thing. And then he talks to Caligos again after that. Trust me, this happened.
Okay.
The first conversation is brief. It's just about, you know, who did you talk to about it? And he's like, well, I tried Cromie, but she said she did know where they were, but then she didn't. And then it was confusing. Then I talked to Alexstrasza, even though the Red Dragon Flight had my egg locked up and we're not on the best of terms. But for some reason, Alexstrasza was nice to me, as she always is for some odd reason that I don't understand. Hint, it's because she's nice. And then he goes over and talks to Mela and Bane. And the Mela and Bane conversation, do you want to talk about that one?
Sure. So what happens with Mela and Bane is probably one of the more interesting things. So he runs into them, basically starts talking with them.
It's worth pointing out Bane calls to him.
Yes. And he says, I am surprised and pleased to see you chose to attend. In which you have Rathian doing his normal smarmy. Yes, well, the guest list called for Azeroth's best and brightest. They laughed, he drank, and Mela slipped her arm into Bane's, and the High Chieftain covered it. Rathian had to fight the impulse to dash his glass to the ground, basically confirming what people were suspecting, that the two of them had been involved in some form of romantic relationship, or at least the budding version of one. So they are definitely intertwined with each other in some capacity. This is sort of a bittersweet moment for Rathian. He enjoys that Bane is happy. He's not like bitter about that part of it, but it's, he knew that it would be a wedding and that everybody would be happy and that there'd be this inescapable sense of belonging and love and connection, like some sort of cheerful blight rising to engulf everyone, smother them with cozy contentment. Everyone, of course, except for him. and then a random Tauren that decides to show up. This is sort of important. So a black furred, white markings on his muzzle, Tauren shows up wearing shamanic robes with a staff, not even remotely close to dressed formally. And he's basically staring directly at Rathian. And then Rathian points this out to Bane and says, "Is this one of yours?" And Bane follows the gaze and says, "Nope, that's Kurog, one of Magtha Grimtotem's folks." And you can see that there's still that, for good reason, Bane still has a healthy distrust and dislike of the Grimtotems after everything that they've went through and everything that they've done to the Bloodhoofs and the Taurens in general. So there's this exchange where essentially Kurog is staring at Rathian and basically saying, "You are an unnatural abomination. You should not be. You should not exist on this world." And he keeps talking about, "You were made, cobbled together out of pieces of corpses. You and your depraved kin, you are the very symbol of all that has gone wrong with this world." So the Grim Totem has basically gotten up on their high horse a little bit and talking about the unnatural or natural order of things. And this is kind of an interesting callback, and we're going to get back to that in a second. But a little bit of a scuffle, we'll say, ensures between the two of them, where Rathian snaps his wine glass in hand, sending shards into it, runs up, lunges forward, grabs the shaman by his robe, lifting him as if he weighs nothing, and tells him that, "I can incinerate you in half a heartbeat." Basically, at this point, this is when Kallak comes up to him and says, "Let him go now." And he's doing it as calmly as he can, trying to talk him down. The exchange happens, and essentially Tharissa comes up, Lothar comes up after they destroyed, after having their cake destroyed by this scuffle, looks at them, notes that they have not invited Kurog, notices that Kurog makes note that Kurog has gotten past their security, which
also,
is interesting.
That Mela is the one that when they ask what's going on, Mela is like, "This jackass came in and insulted one of your guests."
Yep, he has so trespassed onto Mela your lands and intruded on your celebrations slowly to harass your guests.
Yeah, Mela jumps right in to defend Rathian before anybody else can. So that's worth noting. Also worth noting, and something that Rathian points out, how does Kurog know what he is saying?
Yep.
So,
but this is
that's a thing that happens.
This is lead up for Kurog. This is lead up for the Grim Totems and what's going to be happening with Dragonflight in general, right? We know a little bit about this, and there are some, again, some mild spoilers here. The Grim Totems have always had sort of a link to almost dark shamanism. They're not quite dark shaman, but they're pretty dang close. And they've always been looking for more power, because power is how you essentially secure your legacy. Magtha was always about that. There was a point where Magtha was invited into the shaman town hall, right? The shaman order hall. And, you know, why was she there? Because one measly artifact of immense elemental power happened to also be there. And some reason we trusted her to be around it. We said before, Matt said this, and I still remember him laughing, "Yep, that'll have no consequences whatsoever moving forward." Kurog is a consequence of that moving forward, because they're looking for that elemental power. What's a really good way to get that? I don't know. Maybe some
Home Depot. No, it's not Home Depot.
Elemental Dragon Depot, maybe. But that's really what we're going to be facing in Dragonflight, is sort of this uprising of these elemental dragons that oppose the Dragonflights, that fought against the Titans, that, you know, want to essentially wipe the Titan influence from the planet of the Earth, or of Azeroth. Rathian is a representation of that. Rathian is like sort of the pure distillment of that, even more so than the dragon aspects. He's cobbled together. He is a laboratory baby. So it's interesting to note that it's Kurog here that is present and was able to get past the guards and slip in unseen. Because here's the other thing. It wasn't just the guards of the Nightborne that were there. You know damn well the Farstriders were in effect. You know that because the Ranger General, essentially, the Lord Regent of the Blood Elves, was getting married, that anybody who wasn't like one of his two trusted friends was on patrol and they don't generally miss anything.
For that matter, I mean, Lorthamar actually literally did bring the Ranger General with him because Haldoran Brightblade was his best man.
Mm-hmm.
And Haldoran Brightblade is the Ranger General.
Mm-hmm.
So he brought that guy. It was really, there's no way this guy should have been able to get in. Quite frankly, if it wasn't a happy occasion, they probably should have kidnapped the dude, dragged him someplace and done magical stuff to his brain until they figured out what he knew and how he did it. Because yeah, this was definitely.
So there's a nod to that I think might've been a potential that they might've tried or considered that. Because Silgrin was sent after Thoris's nod to follow Kurog out of the territory to make sure he did leave. Silgrin is also the one that makes all those lovely portals and has access to all those wonderful arcane labs all over Suramar. So that might have been part of the intention as well, as find out how he got in or find out how he's going to get out. But the interesting thing after this is we go back to that conversation that Matt was talking about earlier is, Rathian composes himself, tries to apologize to Tharissa and Lothamar. They try to assuage his guilt at having caused the scene, and they're like, no, you didn't cause the scene. It wasn't your problem. But during the exchanges, Rathian heard people in the crowd. Whether he actually heard people in the crowd or not is up for debate, but he thought he heard people agreeing with the vitriol that was being spit at him by Kurog. Now, this could be, you know, his own paranoia, his own, the weight of what's ever on his shoulders right now, the weight of living under the shadow of Deathwing that's making him believe that people are like that. But he just basically politely says, my presence is provocative to some and I should have just gone. And so he does. He basically bows, straightens his shoulders and strode off without another word. So he finds himself at the outskirts where he finds two Nightborn basically statues outside of the vineyard. And he's taking a look at him when he's tired and a little bit drunk. He's lamenting the fact that it's been a dead end search of the Dragon Isles, lamenting that he's been having this dream, shattering his sleep, and basically just feeling drained. And then he's got that haunting twinge in his chest, something that during his waking moment, he's feeling something in him, something that is, he's trying to dull down with the wine as of late. And this is where Caligo shows up, and Caligo shows up with a bottle of wine and two glasses and says he could use some help drinking this vintage. Rathian initially starts to say no, but then says yes, pops down, and the two start drinking and talking. And that's where they find out that feeling of loss, or that feeling of whatever it is that Rathian is feeling, Caligo has it too. They bond over the fact that they are both living in the shadow of the former aspects that they served doing terrible things. Because don't forget, like, yes, Deathwing was absolutely awful, but so was Malagos at the end there. Downright a tyrant. And the Blue Dragonflight is all scattered to the four winds at this point. It's almost completely dissolved after the last meeting that they had. And so they share in that sort of, I don't want to say fatalistic or deterministic kinship, but Caligos of all of the dragons understands more of what Rathian's going through than any of them has the potential to. He understands what it's like to be alone. He understands what it's like to live in the shadow of the terrible memory of the one that came before you, to understand what it's like to have all of your friends or to feel like you are, or you're isolated and alone from everything else. And they bond over that. And, you know, Caligos reminds him, like, you helped save Azeroth. And he's like, that's not enough. And then once they realize that they both have this pang in common, it's almost like a light bulb goes over. Like, if we're feeling it, other dragons are probably feeling it too. And so they decide that they're going to go and find Alexstrasza, and they're going to go to Wormrest Temple, and they are going to see what is going on. So Caligos opens up a portal, because don't forget, Caligos can still do magic, and he's still a mage, even at the worst of times. And they teleport there. Do you want to talk about what they see when they get there?
Actually, before I do, I want to talk about the conversation between Caligos and Rathian a little bit. Because it's interesting, because one of the points, one of the interesting things about the conversation is that he's laying out, you know, what happened to Malagos. He goes, you know, I understand, because, I mean, Malagos went mad and eventually tried to destroy all mortal spellcasters. He goes, and Drathan's like, I can tell that you're kind because you didn't bring up that it was Neltharion that killed all of your people and drove him mad. And they have this. It's interesting because you pointed out that in a way, it's not that they have similar experiences so much as Caligos has been there. Like where Rathian is right now is where Caligos was. Like he didn't just think about becoming the Aspect. He became the Aspect. He replaced his hero who turned bad. You know, Caligos was the only one who could ultimately save his Dragonflight. He even had to fight Malagos's biological son to become Aspect because he had betrayed their people and joined forces with Deathwing. So Caligos is, it's really interesting because he's not just sympathizing. He's literally like, I've been there. I have seen this. I have been through this. And I think that's one of the reasons that he gives Neltharion more, Rathian more time than he might otherwise. And I think that leads into the next bit that you're going to talk about, which I will talk about and then let you talk for a while. When they get to Wormrest, there are like hundreds of dragons there, which is like the biggest dragon conclave they've had in a long time. They didn't have this many dragons there when they were being attacked by, you know, the armies of the old gods. When Deathwing, it is pretty much every dragon who could reasonably get back, who could possibly have some idea of what's happening and find a way back in time. So some of the blues aren't there because they're too far away. They went off. Who knows where they are? But it, just about everybody else showed up and is like, what's going on? Why do we all feel like this? But of course, being dragons, they're all sitting around waiting for somebody to come tell them what's going on. They know that Alexstrasza's up there and they're like, well, Alexstrasza will tell us when she's ready. Except Rathian's like, I am not waiting here. I have waited long enough, thank you. And so he turns into a dragon and flies up and just jumps on in. This was another interesting bit because honestly, I don't know about you, but I think in the exchange between him, Nosdormu barely talks to Rathian. Nosdormu does not seem to want to interact with him in any specific way.
No, and there might be various reasons for that. Maybe the animated shorts might lend some thought of that, but yeah.
But Alexstrasza is downright fond of him. And I think it's because he is like Neltharion was. See, I think that's going to be a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be a part where we find out that, you know, it's not that Neltharion made a deal with the old gods. It's that he felt desperate and was tricked and took their power. And then it was too late to stop. And I definitely think that there's a thing about the way Alexstrasza interacts with him that's very gentle. Like she even touches his face and he doesn't seem to know what to do with this, but she is the reason that she's the dragon queen. The reason that she's the mother of dragons is because she is literally the mother of life on Azeroth. She has in the war crimes books, she loves everybody. She even loves the orcs that trapped her and force bred her because they're, you know, she understands that they do things without a full understanding of the interconnectedness of all life. So that's her. So I think she honestly straight up like thinks of Rathian as this, her brother's little boy, you know, like it's like an impetuous, somewhat, I'm trying to think of the right word for it, but like, you know, impetuous nephew who's always a little bit in over his head.
Yeah. The impetuous nephew who's not always playing with the full set of information.
Yeah. Like for instance, he doesn't know where the Dragon Isles are because, you know, when he asked her, she just told him they're lost to us because where they are isn't the problem. They couldn't find them if they wanted to. They were sealed. So you could go to the place where they're supposed to be, but you weren't going to find them. But now you can go there. And that's the gist of what's been going on with all the dragons is that sensation they're feeling is it's inside them. It's like a homing instinct telling them that the Dragon Isles are back. They're open. You can go there now. And every dragon is feeling it. So that was interesting too, I thought.
Yeah, I really liked that. I liked that exchange too. Like I liked the idea that, for lack of a better term, dragons have a built-in homing beacon, which I think is kind of interesting, but it makes a certain amount of sense, right? Like we talked about last week with Tyr and the raising of the dragon, the proto-drakes into the dragon aspects. And then as a result, the flights being born from them, being exposed to the font of order, essentially, that Tyr had created, which we know is up there in Tyr's hold. We know that that's where it is. And if that's the source of essentially their second life, having something hard-coded into the genetics that says, I'm active again, come home, makes a lot of sense. And the way that it is explained in that very gentle, very almost loving way from Alex Straza, like, no, you're homesick. Like, you have to understand, like, this is something we've all been waiting for. The Dragon Isles are calling to us. They are inviting us home. And Rathian doesn't understand this because for the longest time, he didn't have a home. The Summer's Rest Inn really wasn't, it was his home, but it wasn't home. He was isolated.
It wasn't
isolated.
His home. It was his base of operations.
Yeah.
He didn't have a home because he didn't have a life. And that's, you know,
he didn't he himself belong.
Says, yeah. He himself even says this. He's like, you know, I what time did I have for like being a child for, you know, the things that a young whelp would go through? I didn't have time. You know, I was like, can you imagine being like, you know, 2 or 3 years old and deciding I'm going to pit two of the most powerful, you know, blocks of nations on the planet together in combat to see which one of them I'm going to pick to be the ones that save Azeroth at two. Mm-hmm. Even as a dragon, that's a bit precocious. And he himself, even this story, he's like, yeah, that wasn't the right way to go. I was wrong. I should have done that. So it's fascinating.
I like the acceptance though, too, that Rathian has, because in that moment he realizes like the light bulb goes on, the puzzle pieces fall into place, and he was being welcomed. He belonged. He, like the rest of the quote unquote real dragons, his homing beacon activated and he was being called home. He knew now that hurt in his chest wasn't hurt. It was something calling him, and that loss became exaltation, became a jubilant revelation that the dragon without a flight, the one that had his recurring nightmare, you know, that told him that he had this legacy of being excluded, of being the outcast, of being, you know, forced to become exactly what Deathwing became, or what Neltharion became in Deathwing, had the power to transform. He saw it not, he didn't see his dream anymore as a inevitable fall to darkness, but a challenge to basically rail against that. And that now if he went home, he could potentially find out how to have a dragon flight again, how to have a flight of his own peers and people and family beyond just the reds and the greens and the blues and the bronzes. He can maybe relaunch the Black Dragon Flight, free of the corruption, free of the deal that was made by Neltharion, free of the curse of Deathwing, and he can help guide his flight to their future. And he makes a promise, and that promise is something he intends to keep. And I think it's a really, really cool, really important character growth moment for him, because he has purpose. He's not fighting the Legion anymore. He's not running around trying to, you know, second play Alliance versus Horde. He's not trying any weird schemes. He just wants to go home, and he wants to have what was denied to his people, essentially, is what it boils down to. And I think it sets it up pretty beautifully. Anything else?
I agree with you. It felt like that you were sitting there going, okay, so I'm supposed to say something here, but I already said pretty much everything. So yes, that's true. And I'm turning to an invisible camera that's not here because we're doing this via microphones. Like, but I mean, I do think that's interesting. There's tantalizing hints here of what we might see. There's the fact that Nosdormu is like keeping distant and not has never had time for Rathian at all. Just won't meet with him. Why? Like, you know, I can see him not particularly being interested in Rathian, but why would you just not talk to him at all? Even just have somebody in your flight say, you know, like my wife, have your wife talk to her if you don't want to. But he just didn't. And even now, it feels like he's almost deliberately not learning very much about Rathian. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, when you know that at some point in the future, you might end up turning into somebody evil. Although I do have a theory about that, but go ahead.
Oh, I want to hear your theory, actually. I was going to ask you if you had a theory about
that. Well, okay. Do you remember Avengers Forever, the Kurt Busiek Avengers story?
Yeah.
The big one. One of the things about that was interesting to me was that Kang was always going to be like turn into a Mortis in the future. He always knew this, that, mm-hmm. you know, someday he would turn into a Mortis. And therefore, he was always like kind of half from the moment he found out, he was kind of just like half doing his stuff because he was always like aware that at some point this awful fate waited for him. In a way, Nosdormu and Rathian have a very similar issue, except that Nosdormu knows it's going to happen because he has seen the guy. You know, he has seen Murazond. He's watched Murazond die. So he knows what's going to happen to him. But what if, without really realizing it, when he gave up his aspect power, he broke it? And that's why when you go into, in case you don't know, the Uldumon Legacy of Tyr dungeon, spoilers for it if you haven't done it yet, when you go in there, there's a quest to essentially find a disc inside of Morgana that has memories of Tyr, but a member of the Infinite Dragonflight prevents you from getting it. Mm-hmm. And they want it to turn Nosdormu. They want Murazond to be the one true aspect. There will be no other aspects, just Murazond. And the thing is, we know Murazond dies because we killed them.
Yep.
But what if when they gave up their aspect powers, what if when they divested themselves of all Titan-granted gifts in order to essentially lock Deathwing's death as a fixed point in time, for lack of a better word, what if Nosdormu made it so he doesn't turn into Murazond because he no longer has that connection to the power the Titans gave him? He no longer has knowledge of his future, and therefore he can't be sure it's going to happen. I mean, he was before, but what if he isn't now? And what if because of that, it's possible for Murazond to come into existence without Nosdormu being the one to do it?
Yeah, there's that element of that I think we also throw that sort of into whack as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Because
I keep thinking about it. Like, what if we've gone to an alternate timeline where things were just slightly different,
mm-hmm.
in Warlords of Draenor, and we met all these beings that were, I mean, that was Gul'dan just as much as the Gul'dan we knew, but it wasn't. It was still a different Gul'dan at the same time that it was Gul'dan.
And we know that the Bronze Dragonflight, and by extension the Infinite Dragonflight, can open up channels between realities, because literally that's how Warlords of Draenor happens.
Yeah, Kairos went there.
Yep.
Yep. And we know from Shadowlands, or at least from some of the stuff people like Steve Dinizer said, that the people in, the beings you meet in Shadowlands are like common peels off of a thread that is that being's essence. Like, the other Gul'dan and the original Gul'dan that we knew of were both part of a single continuum of Gul'dan, like a single, branching thread. And that means you could have one Nosdormu go off and become Murazond while another doesn't.
Yeah.
Like, and our Nosdormu that's there in the future with us, he may turn into Murazond, but the Nosdormu who's going to show up at the end of the expansion to be the end boss doesn't. And alongside the other really strangely familiar people, we're going to end up fighting them inside of the end time from the other direction. And they're going to win and kill Murazond and save the world and beat us.
The interesting thing about that, too, is that the dream that Rathian keeps having specifically happens at the Caverns of Time.
Why is correct.
Why is that a thing? What is the significance of there? Because Deathwing never got there. That was never seemed to be part of the time. And it also is very central to the Bronze Dragonflight. It has been forever. We've seen it. They've used it to send us places multiple times in order to correct things or make sure things happen. It's one of those interesting things that if it ends with Nosdormu and Murazond, maybe that's the significance of it. Right. Maybe that's why it's so present in Rathian's mind. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how a lot of this shakes out, but not to get into the weeds on that one. I know everybody at home would love to hear us do that, but we're kind of running out of time here. So I just want to loop back to the story. The story gave us the setup for why the dragons know where the Dragon Isle are. We know that they're going to be heading home. We know why they're heading home. We got to see a little bit of the interplay between the different factions, at least a little bit, and seeing that some of the tension over the last several years has started to not dissipate completely, because there is definitely some friction still there, but at least lessen to the
point. There's an actual effort from both sides to not do anything to make it worse. Like, you see, like, Tyrallian, who is a military figure, he is a general, he is not a statesman, understands that, you know, I will go to this thing and I will make nice and I won't, you know, mention any of the stuff that, you know, happened between us, because the whole point of this is, in order to get past the stuff that happened between us, we have to let it end. Like, there's a whole thing about that. You know, what's the saying? The eye for an eye makes the whole world blind.
Yep.
If, you know, yes, things have happened, but if we don't let it go and try and move on from it, then we'll just be fighting a fifth war in a few years. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting that Turalyon, of all people, seems to understand the importance of what they're doing.
Except for, you know, Ken Greymane, who couldn't be arsed to show up.
Yeah, Mia went. I don't.
Close enough.
Gen's never going to like the people that, you know, he blames for killing his son. So. No.
But I think that's going to do it, unless there's anything else you want to add, Matt?
Yeah, I wanted Mila and Bane to make out. That's what I would have added.
I think that's not Bane's style. Bane's much more subtle Torin than that.
Mm, I think that, you know, they don't have to make out in front of everybody. They could just go off somewhere and make out. Yeah, you're asking me what I wanted, man. And you're all, he wouldn't do that. Like, then why ask me? My fanfic's going to have lots of makeouts.
Well, stay tuned for whenever Matt decides to get around to those, because I'm sure they'll be absolutely glorious. In the meantime, Blizzard Watch is made possible due to generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast signing community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience. Again, folks, if you have any questions for this podcast or any of our podcasts, send them into podcast@blizzardwatch.com or one of our various channels. Please send them in. We're running low on questions for this show, and more is always welcome. Lillian
Voss is totally making out with Kelly at the same time.
Maybe.
Not in the same place, but at the same time.
All right. But with that, folks, we'll see you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.